There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 825, March 23rd, 2020. Nasser?
Thank you, sir. I say hello, listeners. Kerry says sorry. Monaco Grand Prix is history. Le Mans in September. We shall remember the Corona calendar. Back to the host now, the Samuel Adams of podcasting.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Chase Carey thinks everything is going to be just fine. Max says no to virtual world. Baku is done. And, of course, this week's interview from the past will be Matthew Brabham, continuing with the Aussie tradition, and this was recorded in August of 2012. And I want to remind everybody that we need your contributions to keep this program on the air. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know you want to. Anyone who donates $100 will receive an F1 Weekly coffee cup and sticker. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I am doing very good, sir. Indoors, like a domestic pet these days, but enjoying a lot of motor racing and aviation history on YouTube, so I cannot complain. But I do have a question, sir. Where have all the flowers gone? Where have all the F1 races gone? The answer is gone to YouTube, everyone, please. And that is my wonderful, very comfortable and extremely happy refuge these days. How are you taking up the quarantine in Cali?
Well, sanitizing and deodorizing the palatial studios. Of course, organizing and tabulating all these interviews we've done from the past. Thinking about ways to improve the program. And wondering if Formula One and racing in general will ever return.
Well, hopefully it will return this year, but I agree with you that Mr. Chase Carey and also Mr. Penske are being very hopeful that they can have Formula One soon in June and the Indy 500 in May. I hope they are right. I hope it works out. And the FIA, through a press release, you know, first they said Dutch and Spanish Grand Prix are being postponed. And then came the cancellation of Monaco Grand Prix and the historic Monaco Grand Prix. And this was a surprise, as this is the top of the pops of Formula One. And now it has been confirmed that Monaco Grand Prix will not be rescheduled this season. So I know it's glitz and glamour and, you know, crown jewel of Formula One, but it's really nothing but a single file procession. So I am not going to miss this race too much. But it will be good to have it back next season. Then came another press release. The race in Baku is Azerbaijan. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, welcome to round one of the 2020 Formula One season, the Canadian Grand Prix in Montreal, at least for now. Let's hope we do not have any further issues and delays, additional outbreaks. Till then, stay safe. Sir, you think we'll have a Grand Prix, first Grand Prix in June?
No.
Who knows, man? I also have my doubts. I'm hoping now maybe the season will start in Austin, Texas.
No. In reality, I think there won't be a 2020 season, just like there won't be an Indy 500. I think things are going to explode and get worse, especially in a few states. And I believe that this entire season is done. I don't even expect to go to Laguna Seca or Pebble Beach. The risk would be too great, and I think nobody's going to be taking any chances this season. I think the year is a wash. We're going to just try to get our economic front office back in order.
Yes, and you know, you said things will explode, and they of course will explode if people don't behave and don't listen to the authorities and still show up on the beaches. So that's not very good. But I think, you know, because Mr. Chase Carey will go on rescheduling the calendar based on time and circumstances, saying they do not need team's approval, which was interesting. F1 is hopeful at this time to cram in about 15 to 18 races once the season gets going. The season was supposed to end in November, but it may now end in December. I'm sure you remember last year's season finale was on December 1st. The plan right now is this. The races will be most likely two-day events. Quali and GP on Sunday, which I like. We may have several three consecutive weekends of Formula One, which is also very good. And as we all know by now, the summer break has already started. All this shows F1 is digging deep to bring you the thrill of victory for Lewis Hamilton and the agony of defeat for Scuderia. Thank you, ABC. What say you, Charlie?
Well, that's very true. I mean, we're expecting all of this to come back and everybody be on the same page. So that would be Lewis Hamilton winning, La Scuderia losing, and maybe a freak podium by your friend Lando Norris.
I would like to see a podium by Albon also. Lewis owes him one.
Indeed he does, after that pass. I was watching the 2007 European Grand Prix, one of your favorites, Nasser.
Absolutely. And you know, interesting you say this because I've been watching a lot of races and I was watching an old Formula One race and the podium, I think it was the Canadian Grand Prix. And the podium, I saw that podium and I said to myself, there has never been so much love on an F1 podium as this race. You know what the podium consisted of?
Fernando and his entire family.
No, the three drivers on the podium were Ayrton Senna, Nigel Mansell, and Nelson Piquet.
Definitely my favorite.
Yes, sir. So we'll see how this thing, you know, works out. Now, we go to Le Mans, the great 24-hour race on the streets of Francia, your Shangri-La, has been postponed till September, which means if somebody is vacationing in Europe at that time, hopefully can do both Le Mans and watch a GP from Curva Lesmo. This is what I call Le Fantastique Dolce Vita. Not the first time Le Mans will be run in September. Back in 1968, the race was also held in September as the natives were restless in summertime. Were you in or around Paris in September 1968, sir?
No, sir. I was in beautiful Sevilla, España, where it was calm, cool, and collected.
Getting a haircut?
Si.
Okay. The 1968 Le Mans was won by Pedro Rodriguez and Lucien Bianchi in their most beautiful Gulf livery Ford GT40. Really, really love this design. And I think, in my just humble opinion, this is the most beautiful race car of all time. Lucien Bianchi's brother Mauro was seriously injured in this race and he was the grandfather of Jules Bianchi, that is Mauro Bianchi. Now we come to the Indy 500. The other big kahuna of motorsports world is still set for Memorial Day under new management of Captain Roger Penske. And he is also making waves that he would like to see F1 return to his new property, the Brickyard. The man is standard of excellence, both on and off the track, and I will be very, very happy when F1 is back home again in Indiana.
Back home again in Indiana, and it seems that I can see.
Thank you, Jim Neighbors. What say you, sir?
I'm hoping that everything is beautiful in a few weeks. The problem, it's hard to believe that we're going to be beautiful in 3 weeks. Everything is wrong. People are losing their jobs. The market is down 35%. Nobody is buying cars. Nobody is driving cars. The price of gas has plummeted and nobody cares. All of this has happened in the last 5 weeks. This is not normal circumstances. This is not a normal world. and there's no way it could recover back to normalcy that quickly.
No, I agree that this thing is going to take time. And but as far as the market is concerned, you know, last time we had a financial meltdown because of the, you know, the financial crisis, the joke was that everybody's 401k has become 201k. The way this thing is going, looks like it may pretty soon become 101k. I just hope it does not become 001k.
I think it's now called Brother, Will You Loan Me a Dime, K?
Yeah, that's it. Surely can be that way for many people. And then you know what you do when that happens. You have to grab your coat, step outside, and point your feet to the sunny side of the street. You know, I do believe in enjoying your misery. I don't know about you.
No, I don't know what to think anymore, Nass. This is the most bizarre, surreal thing I never expected.
Yes. And that you're talking about everything has come tumbled down in 5 weeks, and it was only 5 days ago that a Formula One world champion and a podcasting champion were thinking this was just a joke.
Exactly. So true, Nasser. But once again, it's not a joke. It's serious business. And it's not just the, you know, the COVID-19 thing. It's the entire package. That's scary.
Well, right now, COVID-19 is the package, sad package.
Well, the package is tearing down the entire economic world. So we'll see what happens. I mean, we still have zeros to hand out. We're lucky.
Yeah. Well, see, the thing is, you know, it sure will continue. I mean, look at the airline industry, the hotel industry, restaurant industry. Everything is, you know, you have societies being totally shut down. So once this gets going, who's going to come out and say, yeah, you know, the first thing I want to do is spend $500 for a Grand Prix ticket. So this is a big problem now for everybody.
Exactly. That's the entire thing, is coming out of this, everybody's priorities are going to change.
Yes. But you know, this world has, like Bernie Ecclestone said at the time of the financial crisis, it's not the end of the world. And I do believe in that. And you know, this world has survived World War I, World War II, many other issues. So, you know, just everybody has to hang in there. And I, you know, obviously I'm no one to make a plea or a request, but I do think people should be considerate and given the time and circumstances we are in, at least obey the law or listen to the man.
I understand. The man is in charge, so we will listen. I also want to mention that we will discuss the virtual racing that happened over the weekend. So why don't we take a quick break? We'll come back with the Matthew Brabham interview and, of course, the spinning globe of Motorsports Mondial. So we'll be back after this brief message.
Attention Formula One fans, how would you like to have access to an all-inclusive USA-based Formula One website that provides discounts and reviews on Formula One ticket, apparel, travel, and collectibles companies? Go to F1FanAdvisor.com and see for yourself. Whether it's finding the highest-rated Formula One memento stores, ticketing companies, or apparel stores, F1FanAdvisor.com is the place to find it. Plus, F1FanAdvisor.com has negotiated some serious discounts for USA-based fans with select companies on their site, so check it out now. And for a limited time, F1FanAdvisor.com is offering their free report, The 5 Costly Mistakes to Avoid When Purchasing Formula One Tickets, so you can avoid the ticket-buying pitfalls that most F1 fans make. Go to www.F1FanAdvisor.com to see how big of a discount you can get. It only takes seconds, and it's completely free. Get your discounts, plus the free report, The 5 Costly Mistakes to Avoid When Purchasing Formula One Tickets, absolutely free. Race to www.F1FanAdvisor.com now.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. And this week we have a special presentation. the Kangaroo Leap, sponsored in part by Qantas, Australian for airline Mate. What we're going to do here, sir, it was very nice of you to come up with this zany, brainy idea of putting the interview with Sir Jack Brabham. And today what we will do to continue the Aussie theme and the Brabham family legacy, we shall play the interview we recorded some years ago with his grandson, Matthew Brabham, and he is the son of Jeff Brabham, who was immensely successful here in sports car racing and also raced in Indy cars. So take it away, sir.
This is a beautiful interview with Matthew Brabham, grandson of Jack Brabham. Nass, introduced this young man.
Yes, sir. First of all, my thanks to Matthew for his time. And Matthew, obviously, very famous racing heritage and very successful also. He started out in karting, did several state championship, national championship, was very successful, then has moved into motor racing, and he also was looking to go into Europe, and things didn't work out at the last minute, so he came to the United States. He was actually born here in the U.S. when his dad was racing in the Nissan GTP car, and of course won a lot of championship and a lot of races. And Matthew started out with a bang also, with victory in the season opener at Sebring, and has been on the podium many times. He's second currently in the championship, so the future is very bright, and hopefully we'll see the third generation Brabham name keep the winning tradition alive. And so my thanks to him. And of course I told him that when you come to California, since he likes surfing, I said, you know, if you let us know, F1 Weekly will buy him his first fully loaded California burrito and take him to Santa Cruz, which is half an hour from here. So that's the offer on the table for Matthew, and thank you again for your time.
And don't forget, Nasser, we have a bonus after Mr. Brabham.
Yes, we have another Australian goodie bag bonus after this interview, and it's a surprise for our listeners, and thanks to you-know-who.
Mr. Matthew Brabham, please.
Hey, yep, this is me.
Matthew, Nasser from California with F1 Weekly.
Okay, yep.
Are you having a fair dinkum day in Florida?
I'm not in Florida. No, I'm in Indianapolis. So.
Oh, a big racing capital of the world, huh?
Yeah. Okay.
Matthew, I understand you're an American-born Aussie. Tell us a little bit about your early days in USA, please.
Well, my early days in US, I don't have really any memory whatsoever, because my parents and I moved over to Australia when I was one year old, so I basically spent my whole entire life growing up in Australia and racing, you know, all the way up until this year. So I don't really have much memory at all of America as a little kid.
Okay. Your family's racing heritage is very impressive. Did you ever think of becoming the next Ian or Greg Chappell, or was it always motorsports for Matthew?
When I first started racing, I was a runner, and I did BMX for a while. I didn't really have, you know, much interest in racing when I was young. But when I started, you know, like going to different races and mum's races, I started getting really into it. And I started racing go-karts, and, you know, ever since I started racing go-karts, it's basically what I've wanted to do, is become a race car driver. So as much as my parents didn't want me to, because they knew, you know, how much it cost and how hard it actually was, I, they'll find to carry me through my career. But, you know, they're always asking me, you know, are you sure it's what you want to do? Because, you know, so, but, yeah.
Okay, what I find interesting is a quote from you, which I read on a few websites, saying, "I became interested in racing, watching my mother race jet skis." So my question is, what happened to Daddy dominating GTP in a Nissan?
I think that was just before I was born, and, you know, I was so young, I didn't really have any memory of those days. So, you know, like, the first memories of, like, racing with my family were just basically with my mother when I was about, you know, like, 4, 5, 6 years old, when she was racing jet skis in America and Havasu in the world finals and stuff like that. So I remember going to all those races and seeing, like, you know, feeling the atmosphere and how cool it was and all the events and stuff going on, and watching mom jet ski race. So yeah, it was definitely like that was the main, you know, the earliest memories of, you know, racing that I was interested in.
Yeah, I tell you what, racing fans in America, and I'm one of them, we have very fond memories of your dad dominating in that blue, red, white, and blue Nissan.
Yeah.
What is your dad doing these days? Is he still involved in motorsports, apart from the connection with you?
He's basically, he works back in Australia, and his job, he runs BMW driver training and Maserati and Lotus driver training. So, basically, he just runs the driver training programs for, you know, the companies in Australia. And, you know, he goes to the racetracks and, you know, like, does laps in, like, the BMWs and takes people around on hot laps and stuff like that. So he's still getting, like, I think he's, you know, he's still involved in motor, like, some type of motor racing, I guess. But it's more of a job to him now than anything else. But, you know, I think his biggest interest, you know, is basically through my racing, and he really enjoys, you know, working on my side of things.
Did he ever give you any driving lessons with the Maserati or BMW?
Yeah. When I was really young, I used to go and work at the driver training courses with Dad, and he'd stick me in the, you know, the BMW behind everybody. And I'd tag along the back and drive around, and that's basically how I learned to drive, like, a manual car, and I learned to do, like, gears and shifting and heel and toe and all those kind of things I learned with Dad at his BMW driver training while he was working. So I'd go out and help out and be the cone guy and pick up all the cones if they knocked them over, and then at the end I'd get, like, a run through the course. And it was pretty funny because, you know, that all the driver training people would come in and they'd set up like a motocana, like a course through cones.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they'd all do the course through cones. I'd be helping out. And at the end, they'd be like, oh, let's see what your son can do. Let, you know, send him out there. Let's see what time you can do. Because I'd done it so many times. I'd go out and, you know, like, beat all their times. And it was pretty funny to see the look on their faces when it's like, 12-year-old kid was jumping in a, you know, a proper, you know, BMW road car.
Very good.
Beating all their time. So.
So you had fun growing up.
Yeah, it was lots of fun.
That's good. Okay, in Land Down Under, you won karting championships in New South Wales and Queensland. Tell us a little bit about your karting days, please.
I started when I was 7, and, you know, for the first couple of years, I was just, you know, treating it as a fun thing, and we started to do the bigger races, and I got more and more enthusiastic about just doing the bigger races and concentrating on winning the big ones. So, you know, the main title, like the championships over there, was each state had their own state title, and if you won the state title, you get like a different color, like, number plate, so that everybody knew that you were like a state champion. And they were open to everybody in all of Australia. So it was basically like, you know, they'd have the Queensland, New South Wales, Victorian, and South Australian state titles. And everybody, you know, that was good at kart, like, up, you know, serious about karting would be at these races. So we basically just stuck to doing the big races. And my aim was to win a state title, like, in every class I went through. So, you know, the first class was midgets, and I managed to win my first state title there at Griffith, and then that was a New South Wales state title, and then I went rookies and the Queensland state title in Toowoomba, which is where, which is quite close to where I live, and then, you know, I moved up to junior national and juniors, and that was good for me, so I won titles in the same year, and you can only lose national Australian karting titles in juniors.
Mm-hmm.
So I only did that one year because I was really only in juniors for, you know, basically a year and a bit, and I got taken out in the pre-final, so I had to start the final from 24th, and I came through in 52nd in that one. So yeah, I had a really, really good year in go-karting that year, and that basically, you know, through that really good year in go-karting, I, you know, started doing Formula 4 tests with the Formula 4 teams in Australia, and basically just like moved up out of karting into race cars. But karting was so much fun for me. I mean, it was like we never ran with a team or anything like that. Me and my dad just did it purely by ourselves, working on the go-karts by ourselves, prepping them. Everything was done by me and my dad. So I learned a lot, you know, about like how, you know, to prep, right, like prep and how much work actually goes into, you know, the cars or go-kart before they even get to the track. So it was lots of fun. It was like a family event kind of thing with me and my dad. And we'd drive around everywhere. We did everything purely by ourselves. So it was a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun between us.
Okay, great. Now, if I have this info correct, looks like your first Formula Ford victory came at Phillip Island Circuit 2010. Is this your favorite track in Australia?
Yeah, definitely. It has to be one of my favorite tracks. Yeah, by far. I mean, Australia's, you know, limited on the, you know, international, you know, well-made tracks. So, but to have Phillip Island is just, you know, I still struggle to find any tracks that I can relate to Phillip Island that are as good as Phillip Island, because just the atmosphere and the, you know, when you go up the main straight, all you can see is ocean.
Yeah.
And it's such a smooth and flowing, fast track. It's so much fun to drive on.
Great. Now, last year in the Victorian State Formula Ford Series, you won 8 of 12 races and 7 in a row. What was the best victory? And since you had such a dominating season, were there any lows during the season?
Definitely the highlight of last year would have to be my National Series win, because, you know, I missed the first race. I only did 3 national races out of the national championship in Australian Formula Ford because I was completing year 12. So I backed off on racing and just focused like on the state series and only did 3 national races. But the very first national race I came out and did was at Winton. I think it was the second round of the National Formula Ford. And I won the first race and the third race, and won the meeting overall, and qualified on pole. So that was definitely the highlight to, you know, like come out in my first national race of the year after everybody had been like testing and doing all the, you know, and already had one race under their belt. To come out and win was just, you know, really, really cool. And that was definitely the highlight of my year. That was definitely the most sweetest and, you know, the victory I enjoyed the most.
Okay. Now, before coming to the land of your birth, did you look at some possibilities to race in Europe?
Yeah, definitely. We were. I had a sponsor that was looking to take me over and do a Formula Renault 2.0 Euro Series.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to do the full season this year, and I was going to live in Lyon in France and work with his business in the meet, like on the off time of racing, and raced a full Euro Series there. But at the very, very last minute, his business, you know, I don't know what exactly happened, but I think his business went a little, you know, down the drain a little bit, and he wasn't able to sponsor me. So we kind of like had, like, I didn't really want to stay in Australia and do Formula Ford again, and because it was kind of like, I needed some experience in wings and slicks and downforce. So we just started looking elsewhere. I mean, Europe was, we were still trying to go to Europe, but it's just so hard to go there without any major funding or sponsorships. It's so expensive. So when we looked at the, you know, USF 2000 and going to America, it was just by far the easiest option, you know, because I'm a citizen here, and we know a lot of people here, and a lot more affordable than anywhere else to run here and in the USF 2000 series. And there's like the prize money at the end of the series, you know, really, really helps.
Since you're an American citizen, do you listen to Bruce Springsteen's song, Born in the USA?
I've heard of that one, but no, I still prefer my, you know, the music I grew up listening to in Australia with all my friends and whatnot. I'm still yet to be Americanized, I think. I'm trying to learn as much of the, you know, cultural differences as possible and try and fit in as much as I can, but I'm still definitely not there yet.
What is your taste in music, Australian music, Bee Gees and Kylie Minogue?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, Australia is very, has a lot of European stuff. So, you know, a lot of the, like, dance and club music. And I really like the olden style rock, I guess, like modern rock. You know, like, I really like Jimi Hendrix and Fleetwood Mac and, you know, some bands like that as well. But I definitely am not into the rap music that the Americans listen to over here.
No, dude, you want to become an American, you have to learn how to say, yo, what's up?
Yeah, I'm still yet to learn all the you know, the slang like that. And the
okay, but I'm a big music fan also. You mentioned two very interesting names. Jimi Hendrix, have you ever heard his version of a song from Bob Dylan called All Along the Watchtower?
Yeah, that's definitely one of my favorite songs. I have that on my iPod, yeah.
The guitar work is incredible.
Yeah.
Good.
It's definitely one of my favorite songs by far. I like, you know, that's definitely like the outstanding song that I enjoy the most from him. So.
Yeah. So you are on the right track, young man.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, sure. Okay. You started your American racing career in the U.S. Formula 2000, what you're doing this year, with victory in the opening round at Sebring and second place finish in the second race of the weekend. Was this a big surprise, and were your parents here for that occasion?
They were here. And it was a little bit of a surprise. I mean, I definitely made a big jump, you know, for the race. I mean, we did the winter series beforehand, and you know, I definitely wasn't as strong in the winter series as I was at the first round of the main championship. So it was a little bit of a surprise, but you know, I really, really enjoy Sebring, and that's definitely, you know, another one of my favorite tracks. And the car setup was really good, and you know, I was just really, really on it mentally that weekend, and we had some serious speed. I mean, it definitely surprised me, you know, if I look back and, you know, I was only doing Formula 4 and this was basically my first year with wings and slicks and downforce. So it was a little bit surprising, but, you know, like once you get up front, you want to, you don't, you know, think about, you know, what you're doing before. So I'm basically focusing on just winning as much as possible and running up front. I mean, I'm getting frustrated with all these second place finishes, and you know, I got to keep reminding myself that, you know, well, this is my first year, I guess, but I'm definitely, like, ever since that first win at Sebring, I've just been hungry to win more, and I can definitely have the speed to run up front, you know, every race and basically challenge for the win every race. So it was a little bit surprising at first, but you know, I kind of forgot about it very quickly and just focused on, you know, basically running up front and winning as much races as possible.
Great. Now, in the last round at Mid-Ohio, you and your teammate Spencer played Senna and Prost at Suzuka at the start. Who was at fault, you or Mr. Spencer?
Whose fault?
It was his fault?
We agreed on a racing incident. I mean, it was really silly because before the start of the race, a car in the World Challenge Series blew an engine and drove the whole way around the track, spilling oil everywhere. And there was so much oil that they ran out of stuff, like sawdust, to clean it up with. So there was basically half the track just covered in oil. And every lap we came through there, everybody was slipping and sliding. And the one lap that me and my teammate basically came together was we're just basically running side by side into one of the corners, and we both hit the oil. And, you know, it was basically a racing incident. It was kind of, none of us could have really got out of the situation once we got into it. And, you know, I think if there was no oil there, we wouldn't have hit each other. So, you know, I think it was just a little bit of everything, but I don't think it was anybody's in particular fault. And, you know, me and my teammate were fine with it. And, you know, we agreed after the race, it was just racing. But, the oil, you know, it was really tough to get through there side by side with oil as well. So we ended up just getting tangled up and, you know, basically just sliding off the track into the gravel trap. So
what was the reaction of Mr. Cape, the team owner?
He was very, very disappointed at first. You know, we got a big lecture on, you know, me and my teammate both got a big lecture on, you know, we can't be doing this for the rest of the year. That's the last time that's ever going to happen. So, but they got over it quickly. I mean, we're, you know, me and my teammate are so much quicker than everybody else. I don't think it's going to be a real problem, you know, for the rest of the year. You know, I think it was just that one race with all the different elements. You know, we were on wet weather tires in the dry and there was oil everywhere. It was just one of those races where, you know, there was just everything was going on and people were going everywhere in which direction. So it was a pretty hectic race.
Now, three rounds remain. You are second in the championship. Do you plan to be more aggressive in the remaining races to try and win the championship?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, to win the championship, I'm definitely going to have to be winning every single race from, you know, or if, you know, basically going for the win in every single race for the rest of the year. And that's how it's been from the start of the year. But it's certainly going to be a challenge. But, you know, I feel as though I still got a really good chance to win the championship because I've been quickest, you know, every single race. I just haven't been able to quite get over the finish line first. So the next couple of races, you know, Road America, I really enjoy that track. And, you know, the test day there, I was quite a lot quicker than everybody else. So I feel I'm going to be really strong there. And, you know, the championship's, you know, still relatively close. And I keep just chipping away at it every race, getting the fastest laps and, you know, getting on pole and getting those little points that just make a difference. You know, I think I'll have a good chance by the end of the year, but anything could happen, so we'll see.
Okay. Now, what is more important in your future career, victory in Indy 500 or victory in Albert Park in a Red Bull or a red car?
Well, I think the Indy 500 would definitely be one of the most important because nobody in my family has won that race yet. So, and I know how much they've all wanted to win the race and how prestigious that race is. So, to win the Indy 500 would just be absolutely fantastic. I mean, it's just something that nobody in my family's done yet. And it's something that most of my family has always wanted to do. So if I could get that accomplishment, I'd be very, very happy.
I'm sure you know your family name played a major part in changing the face of IndyCar racing.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Your grandfather, and I was so happy and privileged to meet your grandfather a few years ago here at Laguna Seca. He won three Formula One championships. First of all, how is he doing? And any stories he told you from his days in Formula One that you can share with us, please?
He's doing great. I mean, where I live in Australia, he lives just 5 minutes up the road. So I see him, you know, really quite often. And he's, you know, he's getting old. I mean, you know, he's getting, you know, towards the end, but he's doing well. I mean, he's in a routine and he's, you know, really enthusiastic about my racing. Whenever I'm, you know, whenever I was racing in Australia, he'd always make an effort to come out and watch. And, you know, he's always sending me texts and congratulations, you know, notices after every race I do here in the States. And so, you know, he's doing well, but yeah, there's definitely been a lot. I definitely heard a lot of stories over the years that, I quite honestly don't know how he survived through his era with all the stories he tells me of, like, near-death experiences, just absolutely insane. You know, I think it's like an accomplishment. Like, I still can't get over the fact that he lived through, you know, what he did. Because there's a lot of friends around him that didn't quite make it through that year, those, you know, dangerous, deadly years. So, but, I find it like the most entertaining stories that he tells are not so much the racing ones, but, you know, the ones where he was flying, because he used to fly his own airplane to all the races and the crazy stuff they did in the airplanes and, you know, how close they nearly came to death. Like, know, all these airplane stories and accidents, you know, that's the most fascinating and exciting stories that I hear from him.
Yeah, yeah, interesting. Yeah, I do recall him telling, because we asked him about Jeff, your father, and he told us what he was doing. And he did mention, because we had asked any other family member in racing, and he says, yeah, Jeff's boy is doing karting. So we knew about you before you even got here.
Nice, yeah. He's always trying to push my cause. You know, whenever he's talking to somebody, he's like, so have you heard about, you know, Matthew? So he's really good with that.
Yeah, good, great. Now, given the racing success in family, does it put more pressure on you to perform, or do you see it as a motivating factor?
I see it, you know, as a motivating factor. I can't let it, you know, disadvantage me in any way. So I just try to keep, you know, I just try to look at all the positives, I guess. But I see it as an advantage because, you know, I don't quite have the pressure of other people, I guess, that, you know, that their dads put on them, because, you know, the other dads of other race drivers, I guess, they've never really done it themselves. So they put a lot of pressure on their kids, you know, just to do well and succeed. Whereas, you know, my family, I think, and my dad and my grandpa and everybody else knows, you know, exactly how hard it actually is and how demanding mentally and physically it is. So they, you know, they definitely, you know how hard it is, and, you know, the pressure that you put on yourself, let alone anybody else's pressure they put on. So it's definitely, you know, an advantage, I think. And they try to, you know, put as less pressure on me as they can. So I think it's definitely an advantage.
Great. Now, tell us a little bit about Matthew Brabham, the young man, not the race car driver. You already mentioned about your taste in music. How about your taste in food? What sports you enjoy watching apart from motorsports?
Yeah, I really enjoy you know, sports. I really miss some of the things in Australia that I don't get here, like the surfing and my friends. You know, I really miss, you know, going out at the beach and, you know, enjoying the waves and surfing with my friends. I mean, that's the biggest thing I miss from America and here. I lived in a place called Surfers Paradise. We used to go surf, you know, go out on the beach, you know, surfing and boogieboarding, you know, every day. So I really enjoy that. And, you know, I really enjoy, I really found a liking to ice hockey here. I mean, and basketball. I mean, I've been trying to get into all the American sports over here, but I always like soccer as well, a little bit as well. But I used to run a lot when I was growing up as well. So I do that quite a lot now when I'm training for racing. And you know, foods. I'm not really. I just enjoy my own mum's cooking. Hers is the best. I mean, I haven't been able to find anything better than my mum's cooking. So she definitely makes my favorite meals.
Great. Well, you know, if you want to do surfing, we have a couple of recommendations for you here in California. One is called Santa Cruz, and the other is Venice Beach. Venice Beach in Southern California.
I've heard. I haven't been able to get over to California while I've been here, so I'll definitely have to get over and check it out.
Well, I'll tell you, we are based in Northern California, San Francisco area. If you are coming here, and if you let us know, we'll take you to, first of all, we're going to buy you your first California burrito, and then we'll take you to Santa Cruz.
Yeah, sounds good.
I
really enjoy that.
Yeah, it's great talking to you, Matthew. All the best.
Okay.
And I look forward to seeing you at the races soon.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, have a good day. Have a fair dinkum day now.
Okay, will do.
Thank you.
Thanks, Matthew, for joining F1Weekly.com. Nasser, and now tell us what's in the goodie bag.
Okay, today we have a treat, another treat from Australia. This is a conversation with Ms. Prajan, who is an active member of the forum and is also available when we have the F1 Weekly Familia on the Skype chat during the Formula One races. So hopefully listeners will enjoy her story And I would like to thank her very much for her time. And again, this was done in a short time, so I appreciate the cooperation. And she inherited love for motorsports from her brother, who is also a big F1 fan. So I told her, you know, in the next few weeks, we'll call the family again and chat with the brother also, if that's okay with him. So thank you, Bridget, for your time.
Okay, folks, on the line today, all the way from Brisbane, Australia, is Miss Bridget. Bridget, welcome to F1 Weekly. How are you today?
I'm very good, thank you. You?
I'm doing fair dinkum, thanks. How is the thing? How was the weather in Brisbane, Australia today?
Sunny and warm today. Oh, it's always sunny and warm here.
Did you watch some motorsports? I know no Formula One this weekend, but did you enjoy some motorsports from around the world?
The last race I watched was the Formula One in Hungary.
Did you enjoy that?
No, it wasn't the best race of the year, but it wasn't the worst either.
Yes. What has been the biggest surprise for you in Formula One this year?
Honestly, I would have to say Alonso doing so well in the Ferrari, which personally I don't think is the best car in the field.
Very true. Are you a big Mark Webber fan?
Huge Mark Webber fan.
Okay. Who is more popular in Australia, Mark Webber or Casey Stoner?
It depends on where you go. So every state kind of follows different sports, but I think, to be honest, it would probably be equal between Stoner and Webber. We like anyone who wins.
Well, yeah, people love winners. That's very true.
Yeah.
Okay. And who would you like to see win the Formula One? Apart from the obvious Mark Webber answer, apart from him, who would you like to see win the championship?
I am a Red Bull fan, so I'd have to say Vettel.
Okay, yeah, he's, you know, frankly, I won't, will you be surprised if he ends up winning the championship?
I would be, yes.
Yeah. You know, I would not be, because I think if they give him a car that was, you know, very close to what he had last year, I will not be surprised if he, because if he's winning a race, chances are Mark Webber is a close second or third. And
So,
we'll see what happens. Now, tell us a little bit about how you got interested in motorsports, please.
It was my brother, Stuart. I've always loved Formula One. Like, it's always been, my family's always watched it, but as a young girl, I never really particularly liked it. But I've always known the teams and I've always supported a team. And then I think it was 3 years ago, my brother took me to the Melbourne race for the first time, and I just came away completely in love with it. Couldn't get enough of Formula One.
Now, you know, when people go to a Formula One or any motor race, normally if they are not interested, the sound either turns them on or turns them off. What was your impression of the sound of Formula One engines, which I love so much?
I absolutely loved it.
Yeah. And what was the thing that impressed you most from your first visit to the Formula One race?
The whole atmosphere was just amazing. Like, I love watching it on TV, but being there and seeing the cars close up, and we were sitting on the last corner so we could see the cars going up straight, and just realizing how fast they're going and just how skilled the drivers really are, I just completely fell in love with it.
Now, your country has got a few tracks there, and one of them is very beautiful, Phillip Island. What is your favorite track in Australia and also other parts of the world where they do Formula One?
My favorite track in Australia, I've never been there, but I watch the race every year, is Bathurst.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and my favorite Formula One track is Spa.
Oh, yes, Formula One. Spa is very beautiful. Have you been to any tracks outside Australia?
Yeah, I used to live in Indianapolis, so I've been to the track there.
Oh, when did you live in Indiana?
When I was very young, so it was when I was 6 to when I was about 10.
Okay, so you have some, what memories do you have about the Indy 500?
I was never allowed to go because I was always too young, but my mum, dad and brother, I think they went to the Formula One and the Indy 500 every year, and yeah, I just remember being a bit jealous because I always wanted to go.
Yeah, did you at least get to see the track and go to the museum, which is very nice?
Yeah, we went to the museum actually quite a lot.
Yeah, it's I went to all the Formula One races there at Indy, and also I've been to a couple of Indy 500. Very great track, very great atmosphere for sure.
Yeah, I'd love to go back and actually see a race there.
Okay, and when you were here or since then, have you had a chance to visit other places in America?
Yeah, I think from memory, I've been to somewhere between 25 and 30 states in America. I kind of lost track.
Any place that you would like to revisit if you had a chance?
I really loved Texas, ironically enough, because I'd like to go to the race there. But I found, I don't know why, I really enjoyed Texas.
Can you say hee-haw in Australian accent?
Hee-haw!
Very good, very good. Well, now they have a Formula One race, so hopefully one day you can come to the Austin Grand Prix.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you follow Australian V8 series also?
Not religiously, but I like to keep track of what's going on. I'll admit, I've not been very good this year following that one. I keep forgetting it's on.
Yeah, well, you know, last year they showed the Bathurst 1000 for the first time here in the United States live, and it was great. I've followed this race for over 30 years, so it was very nice to see the race live on TV.
Yeah, my brother and I usually watch it from start to finish. We'll just sit down with, you know, we usually make chili for lunch and a beer, and we'll sit and watch it from start to finish.
Great. Now, you mentioned you have not been to Mount Panorama track. What about Phillip Island? Have you been there?
I've been to the track and I've been to the island, but not when there's been a race on.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, now apart from Mrs. Tander, Leanne Tander, are there any other Australian ladies doing well in local racing scene?
To be honest, none that I can think of. I can't think of any off the top of my head.
Yeah. Recently I heard that Leanne is coming back to some sort of racing. Have you heard anything on that?
No, I haven't. It's not usually the first story on the news over here. It's usually kind of low in the news, actually.
Okay. Now, we talked about Stoner. You know, previously you folks had McDowan, Gardner, all great riders from your nation. Do you follow MotoGP at all?
Again, I like to keep track of it, but I don't follow it quite as closely as I do Formula One.
Okay. And talking of Formula One, your thoughts on Weber not going to Ferrari? Would you have liked to see him go there?
No, being a Red Bull fan, I'm very happy he's staying.
Okay. Now, you know, here in California, when the European races are taking place, it's about 5 in the morning. What is your local time when the Formula One race action is in Europe?
In Europe, it's usually anywhere from 10 at night to about midnight. And when it's in America, it's usually 5 in the morning here.
So will you be watching the race from Texas live?
Yes, I will.
Okay, that's good. Okay, great. Now, any thoughts you have on the season? Any things that stand out? Any great moments from the season so far?
I'm really actually very much enjoying seeing lots of different people do well, lots of different people winning. It's making picking a winner for a different race very difficult. But, yeah, I'm really enjoying the season all up and it's so hard to guess what's going to happen next.
Okay, for 2003 at Ferrari, Massa in or out?
I'd have to say out.
And who would you like to see take his place?
Oh, that's difficult. I'm not quite sure, to be honest. I'm not the biggest Ferrari fan in the world. That might be sibling rivalry because my brother supports Ferrari, but I'm not quite sure, to be honest.
Yeah, lately there were some rumors, and I don't think this will happen the way it ended last time. Do you think any chance of Kimi Raikkonen going back there?
I'm not sure. They could be. It really depends on what he wants to get out of this time round in Formula One, whether he wants, who he wants to drive for and how long his contracts are, I guess.
What's your thoughts on Sergio Perez as a replacement at Ferrari?
I think he'd do very well at Ferrari, personally, and I wouldn't mind to see him there.
You think he will be able to do to Nando what Hamilton did to him?
Possibly, but, you know, who knows?
No, I think Alonso is a really top-line driver, and what he's doing this year. I tell you, if he wins this championship this year, it has to be one of the most well-deserved victory. Because, you know, winning championship in the best car is, you know, yeah, great. But winning in a car that he has this season so far, I mean, this is serious peak Michael Schumacher, peak Ayrton Senna type performance. So I have a lot of respect for what he's doing this year.
I have to agree. I actually would, you know, I'd love to see Webber win, but if Webber doesn't win, I'd be equally happy to see Alonso win.
Now, do you follow feeder series, GP2, GP3, F3, anything like that?
Only when they're on before the races, but I wouldn't know any details or drivers.
Okay. Now, Australia also has a local Formula 3 series. Do you follow that? Is that pretty big in your country, or is it just more of a, you know, hobby type thing?
I think it's more, personally, I think it's more hobby type thing. I don't follow it at all, and you never see it on the news.
Okay. And do you follow American racing at all, like NASCAR or IndyCars?
If there's a race on, I'll watch it, and I'll always watch the Indianapolis 500 and some of the other big races, yeah.
What tracks? You know, we have quite a few good tracks here, like Road America, Road Atlanta, Laguna Seca, which is not too far from our Palatial Studios. What tracks in America you like apart from the Indy track?
Laguna Seca would be my second favorite.
Do you watch the MotoGP when they come here? They were here recently.
Usually not, no, because the time difference is a bit hard.
Great, great. Okay, well, I tell you, I really appreciate your time. Would you have a message? Oh, by the way, how did you find F1 Weekly?
My brother introduced me to it because he's on the forum. And once I started getting into Formula One a bit more, he was like, you know, why don't you listen to a few things, go on the forums online. And so I did, and that's how I found it.
Okay, will he listen to Sister's interview?
Yeah, he probably will.
Okay, he's a good man then.
He told me to give him a shout out because he's such an awesome brother.
And yeah, absolutely. What's his name, if I may ask?
Stuart.
Stuart, okay. Hello, Stuart. And you know, one of these days we'll chat with him also if he's available.
Yeah, Stuart's good. He's much more into Formula One and motor racing than I am.
Okay, then I'll tell you next month we will have a chat with him also.
That would be awesome. He would love me for it.
Yeah. And Bridget, would you have a message to your fellow listeners and fellow members on the forum, please?
All I would know to say would be good day from down under.
Yeah, we appreciate that. Okay, thank you so much. You have a good day.
Thank you, you too.
And we'll see you on the forum and the next Skype, you know, Formula One chat.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Cheers.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And once again, thanks for joining the F1 Weekly Familia. Nasser?
Yes, sir. Thank you. Okay, so we're going to continue with our Aussie theme here. As you can see in Cali, the sun is coming up every day and life must go on. So shall F1 Weekly. And we plan to record every Monday, hopefully, if all goes well. And today, in lieu of Australian Grand Prix this year, we shall do a special, hopefully fair dinkum, segment dedicated to Aussie contribution to the world of motor racing. And of course, due to time constraint, we cannot include any and every famous Aussie racer. So let's just start with Jack Brabham. From Blackjack to Honey Badger, the land down under has been on top of international racing world on many occasions with impressive and historic contribution. Blackjack bagged the first F1 championship point for an Australian driver by finishing fourth in the 1958 season opener, the Monaco Grand Prix. Back then, fourth place finish paid 3 points. He opened the 1959 season also in Monaco with victory, becoming the first Australian F1 championship Grand Prix winner, and took the title at the end of the season. The 1959 season featured 8 Grand Prix races, so we've come a long way on that count. Brabham retained his title in 1960. His third and final championship glory came in 1966, this time in his own machine, making him the first driver to win an F1 race in his own car, and to this day only one to win the championship also. The engine used in this car was based on an Oldsmobile V8 and was developed by an Australian company called Repco, which stands for Replacement Parts Company, and they are still in business, which is good to see. Brabham cars took Nelson Piquet to 2 world championships. Drivers who scored their first Grand Prix wins driving a Brabham include Carlos Reutemann, Carlos Pace, and Riccardo Patrese. Bernie became the ringleader of Formula One after becoming owner of the Brabham team. Now we move to Mr. Tim Shenkin. He made it to Formula One after winning the British F3 and Formula 4 championships. He is one of five Australians to have been on the podium in Formula One. His first and only podium appearance was in the 1971 Austrian Grand Prix. He was third. His F1 career did not end on a high note. He failed to qualify for the 1974 US Grand Prix at Watkins Glen, but still got on the grid and was disqualified. Highlights of his sports car career include winning the 1,000-kilometer race at Nürburgring and also at Buenos Aires in 1972, with Ronnie Peterson as his co-driver on board a Ferrari on Firestone tires. Tim Shenkin comes from Sydney and is still involved in Australian motorsports management. And for many years, he may still be involved in the Australian Grand Prix. Next, we come to Wern Schuffen. He won the 1983 Le Mans 24-hour race, which was the highlight of his racing career, in a Porsche 956 with two American dudes, Al Holbert and Hurley Haywood. Schuffen was 1976 Indy 500 Rookie of the Year and was third at the Brickyard in 1981. Now we come to the T in Brabham cars. You know, they were all named BT, not BTK. And that gentleman is Ron Toranac. He was born in Kent, England in 1925. The T in Brabham cars stands for his last name, as he was co-founder and designer of the cars raced by Jack. It was Ron who took over the team after Jack retired and returned to the Big Island. And it was Ron again who sold the Brabham F1 team to the little man who became the Big E of Formula One Circus. Ron later started the Rault racing car business. The name stands for his and brother's name, standing for Ron and Austin Lewis Toranac. Fellow Aussie mate Larry Perkins won the European Formula 3 Championship in 75 in a Rault, and I remember he made it to Formula One also, and to these days he's involved in Australian Touring Car Championship, the Super Cup, the Supercars, I should say. In 1978, another championship was secured by a Rault car by the current boss man of the Dutch Grand Prix, Mr. Jan Lammers. Ron Toranac also designed cars for Macau casino tycoon Teddy Yip, the Theodore Racing cars. Drivers who won the British F3 driving his cars included names like Senna and Piquet, the Papito. In 1988, he sold his Rault business to March Engineering for over £1 million before moving back to Australia. You know, he's still going around. He's like in his early or mid-90s now. Now we come to Ian Jojigan. He also raced in England, and I remember this name from the early 70s, because at that time there were three Australians, Ian Jojigan, Frank Gardner, and Brian Muir, who were doing very well in British Saloon Car Racing, which is now called British Touring Car Championship. From 1964 to 69, he won the Australian Touring Car Championship five times. And talking of Frank Gardner, in the European theatre, he worked as a mechanic for Jack Brabham, and worked his way up to Formula One, where he made 8 Grand Prix starts as a driver. He was a long-time Ford driver in Tin Top Racing and won the British Saloon Car Championship with Blue Oval in 1967 and 68. His third and final championship in this series came in 1973 at the wheel of a Bichon Camaro. In 1971, he won the Rothmans Formula 5000 Championship, scoring 13 podium finishes from 16 starts, including 6 wins. After retiring from racing in Europe, he ran a successful team in Land Down Under, and they came on top in the 85 and 87 Australian Touring Car Championship with Jim Richards driving a BMW. Frank passed away in a place called Mermaid Waters in Queensland in August 2009. Paul Hawkins, he shares two things with Alberto Ascari. Both went into the Monaco Harbor during a Grand Prix. And if I'm not very much mistaken, the scene in the movie Grand Prix of car going into the harbor is actually his car and actual footage. Both Hawkins and Ascari were killed behind the wheel of a racing car on the same date, May 26th. Ascari at Monza while testing a Ferrari, and Hawkins during a race at Alton Park in 1969. And finally, we come to Jonesy Boy, Alan Jones, the 1980 world champion, a tough Aussie bloke tailor-made for Frank Williams and Patrick Head. Alan Jones and Keke Rosberg were the perfect drivers, I think, for Frank Williams' team. Jones was born in Melbourne in 1946, but I believe he now lives in Gold Coast. His father, Stan, was also a racing driver, and both father and son have won the non-championship Australian Grand Prix. Jones gave Don Nicholls' shadow team their one and only F1 victory in Austria in 1977. And Mr. Rogers, please correct me if I'm wrong. I think this car is now owned by an F1 Weekly listener in Canada. Is that correct, sir?
That is correct. Keep up the good work.
He also delivered the first world championship to Frank Williams in 1980. Alan Jones won 12 F1 races and made twice as many podium appearances. His final Grand Prix win was in Las Vegas, 1981. His final F1 race was the season finale on home soil in 1986. He was DNF in that race on board the first iteration of Haas F1. This particular team was owned by Carl Haas, a longtime distributor for Lola cars in the US based in Illinois. And it was in a Lola that Jones won the 1978 Can-Am Championship. After this, he was the franchise owner of Team Australia in A1GP competition. And I think the Australian team at one time included as one of the drivers his adopted son. Christian Jones, I believe, was the name. And now, sir, here's a little extra shrimp on the Barbie in AJ. AJ being Alan Jones, of course. Once upon a time on his way to Monza, he got into a minor fender bender and tried to play Australian rule football with the other driver, but got roughed up by Guido and his passenger Giovanni. Not sure if they asked Alan Jones, "What's the matter with you? Would you like to tackle a couple of Italians if you have a fender bender in Autostrada in Milano or Palermo?"
"Of course, I can handle that. I'm a professional, Nasser."
"Even in Palermo, which is Sicily, Sicilia?"
"You betcha, dude. Just like Patton. I'll make it."
"I guess you've never heard of the Sicilian clan."
"Don't worry. I have a clan."
"Everything is under control?"
"Correct."
"That's good. Anything else you would like to discuss, sir? Do you have any update on your favorite series, NASCAR?"
"Well, yes. They had the virtual race at the virtual homestead virtual track."
"How many virtual cautions they had?"
"They had a lot of cautions. Jimmy Johnson caused a huge wreck. And the winner was Denny Hamlin."
"Oh, that's impressive."
"Isn't it? So exciting, so fun, with extra sugar-free gum. And did you watch the virtual Bahrain virtual Grand Prix?"
"No, sir. I clicked on one of these virtual things, and I guess I'm behind time. This does not float my boat."
"So you're with Max."
"I wish I was."
"And Johnny Herbert was a driver in the virtual race."
"How did he do? Did he break his legs?"
"He didn't die."
"That's good. Do you remember when we met? You know what we should do next time? We should play our next podcast, our interview with Johnny Herbert. Remember talking to him at Laguna Seca?"
"Well, yes, I do. A nice, fine dude."
"Yes, I've met him several times since then and always very friendly. Actually, I met him at the U.S. Grand Prix last year also. You know, he's part of the coverage with one of the networks that I believe, Sky TV."
"We're lucky. We have a lot of interviews that we could fall back on dating back 15, 16 years. So we are going to have fun."
"Yes, sir."
"So there you have it, Nass. I have no predictions, are we? Because there's no racing. Now we're going into the Canadian Grand Prix as the home, as the opener for the 2020 season, which puts us right in the middle of the 2020 year. Therefore, we know that we is in what you call a heap of trouble."
"Yeah, but you know, I heard that to have a Formula One World Championship, all they need is a minimum of 8 races. Another thing that has been discussed is to carry the season from 2020 to 2021, which a lot of series have done. You know, the A1GP used to do that. Formula E has been operating this way. So we want, actually, the World Endurance Championship this year was going to be the same way. between this year and next year. So whatever it takes, we would like 15, 18, or even more races. I say keep on racing, you know, November, December, January, February, then take a 1 month break and then start the 2021 season. And talking of 2021 season, we should, maybe you mentioned this, I don't recall, remember, the introduction of the rules has been pushed back to 2022.
Yeah, but the biggest problem with that is everybody had already begun on the 2021 car, separating into two teams. So, I don't know. That's a tough one.
Yeah, Ferrari apparently was the only one objecting to it. But then, the light went on Binotto's head that they should be, you know, take time in consideration, circumstances, and then go along with the flow. And the flow is not, you know, like they say, the situation is very fluid. It's not very fluid. It's now molasses.
Yes, exactly. And it's thickening up really quickly. This should give Ferrari a leg up.
No, you know, I just think no matter how you roll the dice, Mercedes-Benz is going to come out on top. That's what I feel.
Ja, Achtung, was ist los, mein Herr?
I think what it will take to topple the LCH dynasty is bring Max as his teammate. Or maybe down the road, some other whippersnapper will come up, will be super uber talented. But I really do not see a Max type or a Lewis type or a Nando type right now in Formula 2 and Formula 3. And all these 1, 2, 3, 4, they're all on hold. So we really cannot see if somebody can surprise the hell out of us. The focus in Formula 2 is on Mick Schumacher, who, by the way, I think turned 21 today or yesterday. So belated Das, happy birthday to him.
Keep up the good work, Nass. There you have it. Happy birthday to Mick Schumacher. I want to thank all the listeners who listened. Good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye.